that I can now move into my part one of our The Attitude. And I wrote at the top, think solar. And on this beautiful, warm, sunny day, I cannot help but smile because I have 18 solar panels on my roof, true confessions. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I get to watch my electric dial go backwards. You know, it's like it's so exciting. And then I wrote the following. New York City is thinking solar. Ah, but so are utility companies. And then I wrote in parentheses, but that may not be good news, close paren. Joining me right now on the line is someone who we've talked to on many occasions because whenever you talk solar, for some reason, you find John Farrell. John Farrell is the director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and this is one of the lines I love. He advocates for breaking up the old utility model as a key solution to climate change. And not only do I want to welcome John to the program, but, you know, I was thinking about this, John. We've been doing the old utility model for almost over 100 years. Why would anyone think that that would make sense in 2015? Am I right?
That's a great question. And, you know, I haven't heard a good answer to that.
Yes, yes. But, you know, I think in some ways, as we start talking about the challenges between, you know, the renewables and the different alternative approaches to energy, we need to remind everyone that to a large extent, whether we liked it or not, the utilities are in an old rut. And while everything else has had to change and had to address the future and be more creative, we have not expected the same thing out of our utilities. And if nothing else, just letting people know that they're sort of doing same old, is a way to sort of begin the conversation about why change may not be such a bad thing.
You know, absolutely. And I love the way that you put it, too, because it really highlights the fact that, and I think this is the key issue, if utilities are in a rut, it's because we put them in that rut.
Yes,
you know, the
exactly.
rules that utilities operate under, the market that they play in, it's not a real market in the sense that it's a free market. It's all the rules were created by our state regulatory commissions or our state legislatures. And
right.
so we have the power to change those rules. And if we are prepared to do so, we can wake up and start demanding change.
Well, what first got me excited was I saw two articles. I saw one article about New York City and solar panels, and solar energy. And I was like, New York City, this is like unbelievable. And it turns out that it's really sort of moving at a very, very fast clip to embrace solar, and that now it ranks, I don't know, 10th in the United States, and it like created enough solar to like, you know, basically, you know, energize 10,000 homes. And then as I kept reading this story, you also saw that as it's moving so swiftly in this arena of solar, that there is this kind of pushback. And New York has had to be creative in recognizing the old utility model, the new concept of this solar energy, and how do we bring utilities into, you know, the 2015 era? And they've begun to actually address it, which is exciting. So I want you to talk a little bit about that. And then I also noticed that there was another article, and I believe it was in the Washington Post from just a couple of days ago, about how the utility companies are not happy campers because they like the old model. It's how they make lots of money. But the problem is, even if they like the old model, which is how they used to make lots of money, they probably can't in the future. So if anybody should be receptive to change, it should be the utility companies, because their old model, while it may have felt secure, shouldn't feel secure today because it's not working.
It really isn't. You know, I was just in Tucson, Arizona recently. You know, it's basically one of the sunniest places in the entire country. And the utility that serves Tucson is about 80% coal-powered. And so when you talk about kind of the disconnect there, and I was at a meeting and I was giving a presentation and talking about kind of what the opportunity was in Tucson and why they should be moving towards solar as quickly as possible, which of course the people there kind of already get.
Yeah.
And there's a utility guy there in the room, and they gave him a chance. They said, you know, well, what do you think of this stuff? And he basically spent about 15 minutes saying, I can't really refute anything this guy says, but I don't like it. And he kind of went on to describe about, you know, the culture of the utility is very conservative, that,
right.
you know, they go to work each day expecting to do the thing they did the day before, and that they don't do beta testing. I mean, he said that. We don't do beta testing. There's no betas. That's what my boss tells me.
Now, what is beta testing? So tell people what beta testing is, because you're saying that we don't do beta testing. What the hell is beta testing?
Beta testing means, you know, trying new things.
Oh, okay.
You know,
we
don't try new things is basically what they're saying, because, yeah. you know, whether it's because we get burned by it in the past or we find that we haven't made money when we do that, we don't try new things.
No.
And unfortunately, that model and that attitude that has been successful for them at both making money and giving us low-cost mm-hmm. energy, although with a high environmental cost, is simply not going to work. As you mentioned, there's just too much going on, too much technological
yes.
ferment, too many
yes.
opportunities.
Yes.
You know, we need beta testing. We need innovation and trying new things now, because we have huge opportunities to shift to a lower cost and yet cleaner energy system all at the same time.
So, you know, what is so amazing is that, as you're right, everyone in Arizona is kind of looking at the sky like going, we need to put him on a couch. I mean, have you noticed where we live? And yet at the same time, as you're having this conversation about Arizona and the fact that, you know, 80% of it is coal-fired, oh, my Lord, let's go to New York City, because this is the last place on the planet that I would have thought that they would be, you know, willing to be both innovative and creative and sit down with the utilities and say, you know what, we got to start making change. And what I saw was that in 2007, they started doing something called decoupling, which you're going to have to tell me what that means. And then recently, they're now talking about performance-based rates. So tell me why utilities first are afraid of things like wind and solar and all these other things. What would make them fear this? I thought that they were always talking about the fact that, you know, we have to meet capacity. We have to meet capacity. We have to build a new plant. We have to build a new plant. You know, the sky is falling. They should be kissing me for, you know, putting a solar panel on my roof, because I'm taking the pressure off.
Well, there's a couple things that are going on there. The first one is simply that, you know, change is hard for an institution that doesn't like change and doesn't see change as part of it. You know, this great, great quote from a guy from New York, actually, Carl Robigo. He was formerly an executive at the Austin Municipal Utility. And one of the things he keeps telling me every time I call him up to ask him questions about this stuff, I think he says, John, you have to understand, utilities don't see anything that they don't own as a resource. So you talk about that solar panel on your roof, and the thing is, the utility doesn't see that as a little power plant that's helping them meet their goals.
Right.
They see that as the same thing as you buying an energy-efficient refrigerator. You're buying less energy from them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that actually gets to your question about this notion of decoupling, which is, for 100 years, utilities made more money the more energy they sold. So their incentive and our incentive was to keep using as much as possible.
And that made sense, because guess what? If you look at a graph, you see more energy, more energy, more energy, more energy. And then something changed, John.
Something has. And now all of a sudden that we're not using as much energy anymore, and we've also realized that it was always, and probably always has been, but is definitely now cheaper to focus on energy efficiency first. And so decoupling means we break that connection. We decouple the connection between utility revenue and the money they make and more energy use, so that they no longer have this perverse disincentive to encourage us to use more energy.
So let me read to you the definition that I found. It says, utility revenue used to be based on how much electricity it sells, but now it is based on the number of customers it serves. So tell me, how do they make money then? I mean, I understand that, you know, it's like Walmart. You want to sell more, sell more, sell more, because that's how you make your money. And I would understand, like, electricity, sell more, sell more. That's how you make your money. So how do you make money based on customers you serve versus electricity they use? Give me that understanding. I see it's different, and I get that different part, but I'm just trying to figure out, so how does that work?
You know, this is a great question, and I wish I could describe this in the simplest possible terms, but I don't know that I can, in part because you really have 50 different models.
All
you
right.
have 50 different states, and each state has its own rules. So in Minnesota, for example, where I'm from and I'm a little more familiar, the way they do it is they have, you know, performance incentives. So the utility is required to have energy efficiency programs and to save money. And if they can show a direct connection between the dollar they spent and the energy conservation that was accomplished, then they'll get an incentive payment from the utility commission that will basically fill in the gap for the lost energy sales.
But they must be getting that. Let me just stop you. They must be getting that extra cash from somewhere. That means the ratepayer is paying for the incentive to do the right thing. So while they're saving money through conservation or they're saving money through alternatives, there also has to be some sort of like an infusion of additional cash to the utility so the utility can keep functioning. And that then comes back so I don't save as much, but I'm not saving as much because I'm actually saying to the utility, you need to exist. I have to pay you to exist.
It is a complicated thing. You know, the idea would be that, you know, if the utility needs more energy, which has generally been the case, we're essentially buying energy efficiency instead of buying it from building a new power plant, and in the end it's going to be cheaper even though we have to pay them for that incentive, because the energy efficient fridges that we all buy together using those incentives cost less collectively to get that 100 megawatts, let's say, than building a new natural gas power plant.
Of course.
So, can work, but it's definitely complicated, and it doesn't solve all the problems, because the other issue and the part that decoupling doesn't really cover is that utilities still make money from building things. They've always made money from building things, which is power plants and power lines and all that kind of stuff, and decoupling doesn't really change that piece of it. And so they still have a tension between themselves wanting to build new infrastructure and you building a new infrastructure on your roof.
So
they
they're
don't
threatened, but they're threatened. This is that. That's what I read in the Washington Post article. So here's the problem. So they had this like confab, and all these utility people got together and went, ooh, we are so upset. We are so ticked off. And it's not because they're worried about a hurricane or a storm, but they're worried about my solar panels on my roof. I am now the enemy. So tell me, if they're in the building things, and I am now also wanting to be a little builder person, and I want to put my own little solar panels on my roof, why am I the enemy? And is there a way for us to bridge the gap between utilities looking me at as the enemy and utilities realizing that they actually have value as well? So how do I marry these two concepts together? Because I like utilities, you know, sort of. I don't want to be perceived as doing something negative.
You know, there are ways to do that. And like the good news is that people are working on that all across the country. And New York is actually one of the most exciting places, if one can call what's happening in the utility regulatory system exciting.
Okay.
They have this thing called reforming the energy vision, which is essentially this question of how do you restructure the way that a utility operates so that its incentives are the same as our incentives, that we want it to do clean energy and
right.
do it at low cost and do wind and solar and support people doing solar on their roofs instead of fighting them. So that is out there, and it's going to require a fundamental transformation in the way the utility operates, because what we're going to be saying, I think, from now on, at least it seems to me, is we're going to say, we don't want you to build things anymore, or at least not big things. We want
right.
you to go tweak the distribution system so that, you know, Arnie and John and everybody else who wants to put solar on the roof can do so, and so the system can take that power.
And what I get, what I got out of the New York
energy storage,
yeah.
and those things.
So what I got out of this article, John, is that one of the things that ticks off the energy companies is that, you know, they're being discouraged from making things, but I'm not necessarily being discouraged from making things because I can put solar panels on my roof, but then I require the utility company to buy my excess capacity. All right. So they're like saying, oh, wait a minute here. So you're the builder and I'm the buyer. It's like, you know, and so how do we address that issue? Because right now you and I have had conversations in the past, John Farrell, about the fact that my dream is to have a battery in my basement. I don't want to have to put more energy back on the grid. I want to be able to put it in a battery. And so therefore, when I need it, I have it. And that, therefore, I can be sort of like independent from them. I don't have to feel like I'm giving them something that they may not want or need at an expense that they may not want to pay. And at the same time, I can begin to have a sense of self-sufficiency. So how do we understand that not everyone is going to be an Arnie? And at the same time, how do we fix it so that utilities still can function because we're still going to need a grid?
I think what we're going to have happen, and I think this is what other folks are looking at too, is this notion that the utility moves from somebody who has sort of all-encompassing control over the power generation and the delivery
right.
of power and the maintenance of the grid
right.
into a much more sort of facilitator role.
Right.
They'll still maintain the grid. They'll still make sure that the power can be delivered
yeah.
over the wires to your
yeah.
house.
Yeah.
They'll make sure that it's resilient against disasters.
Yeah.
But we're not going to ask them to build anything anymore because we
wow.
have all of this private capital from
right.
individuals like you and me
yeah.
and other people who are interested in this and businesses
yeah.
and college campuses,
yeah.
all these folks who see an opportunity to cut their energy costs by investing in new renewable energy capacity, those folks will put that out on the grid. And I think what we're going to move to is more of a market, you know, a really levelized playing field where you could have community solar projects and your solar project.
Good, this sounds so conservative.
Storage.
Where are my libertarians? Quickly.
Well,
we're talking markets.
They're here.
We're talking markets.
They're out there in
yeah.
Florida and in Georgia and in
yeah.
Arizona. The conservatives are the one out there saying we have to
yeah.
break up the utility monopoly.
Exactly.
It is time for people to have a chance to participate in this market.
And let me just remind everyone, John, because before I let you go, again, we're talking with John Farrell. He's the director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, which advocates, on top of other alternatives, breaking up the old utility model. And that is that the old utility model worked. It worked at the time we created it. It really, really did. And just because it worked in the past doesn't mean it's going to work now. And like everything else, everything has to morph and change. And I understand the whole idea of winners and losers. But the sad thing is that not only if we cling to the old utility model do we lose, but we harm the environment. It costs us more. I mean, there are so many other aspects of losing that I think people need to be aware of. And just like everything else, you know, utilities need to change, not because they're evil, not because they were wrong, but because things are different today. And I think if we can sort of approach it that way, yeah, they probably don't want to know what the difference is. But in the long run, we have to. if we're going to not only protect our environment, be able to afford the energy we need. It's going to be really interesting. Anyway, I love you. New York City, who would have thunk it? This is like unbelievable. And again, I want people to know that if they look at the New York City model, because they are making all these changes, because they're aggressively addressing renewables, we can actually see this model adopted in a lot of other states. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
All right, John Farrell, you're a peach. Take care. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Ciao. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, everyone. That was John Farrell with the Institute of Local Self-Reliance, and I am huge on the whole concept of the democratization of energy. Mm-hmm. I want it to happen. I want to see everyone be their own little power plant.
I have an ally in the Christian fundamentalists, because they don't like organized power companies any more than organized government, and a lot of them have solar panels on their churches. So
it's
a good alliance.
But it gets to the right end.
Exactly.
And you know what?
That's
There's
right.
another reason for this, everyone. And the other reason for this is the idea of security.
Right.
All right.
That's right.
When you blow up a coal plant that puts all this energy out, how many people get hurt? All right.
Yeah.
And if you all are your own little energy producers, it's a lot tougher. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it was always easy. It's like it reminds me of the Lilliputians. You know, there's lots of little ones. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to keep like knocking them all down. Yeah. But when you have the big Gulliver, it was easy. Just take them down, you mm-hmm. know.
And the Pentagon is doing this.
Well, and they are. And I think that's the other thing is that nobody wants to say this out loud because it's too hard to have the conversation.
Yeah.
But the problem with the old utility model is that the old utility model didn't make sense for what we really need in the future. It's both good for the climate. It's good for security.
Yeah.
It's good for actually efficiency and all those things. And it also means at the bottom line for people means that they can put their money into college and not put their money into heating the outside.
Exactly.
Which is what too many people do. And on that note, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, he's sitting in the studio. I can't stand it. And what does he bring me? He brings me Ben and Jerry's. Oy vey. Ben Cohen is here. This is The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. Stick around. We'll be